Presidential signing statements is the topic of this week's WMUB Forum. I'm John Hingsbergen in for Gary Scott this week with Dr. Chris Kelly and attorney Bruce Fine. Bruce also a columnist for the Washington Times, and we're here to discuss this concept that I guess, Chris, is this somewhat of a wonky sort of a thing that you have to kind of know a lot about politics to even know that signing statements exist, or is it something that the American general public is well aware of at this point?
Well, I think that the public are sort of vaguely aware, given the controversy over President Bush's use of the signing statements, both in the way he has used it over really high-profile bills, plus simply the number of times he's used it. However, for the most part, trying to explain the signing statement itself, it really is more wonkish than anything else. But yeah. I think Americans understand, though, the sense of what's right and what's wrong with respect to the Constitution, and this clearly is something that has smacked Americans as being something wrong.
You have... Yes, go ahead.
The signing statement can have a very, very dramatic impact upon the fate of the United States and clashes. Think of this situation. Congress enacts a law prohibiting any monies of the United States to be used to conduct military operations against Iran's nuclear facilities. They are worried about the crazy mullahs there perhaps taking retaliation. The president signs the bill, so there's no opportunity for an override. And then he says, I think this encroaches on my commander-in-chief powers, and therefore this is null and void, and then proceeds to conduct a military operation against Iran's nuclear facilities. There we have the president there exercising the equivalent of an absolute veto, because there's no opportunity to override a signing statement just saying I'm not going to enforce the law.
Well, let's pick up on this, issue.
Single-handedly getting us involved in military operations.
How does this relate to vetoes? I mean, I know presidents, and I am trying to think, was it President Reagan who was pushing real hard for a line item veto because there were so many budgets going through with which he had some serious disagreement? The line item veto was not granted. Does this become effectively a line item veto that allowing presidents to pick and choose what he wants to enforce?
Well, there are people who have characterized the signing statement as a sort of ironclad item veto for the reasons that Bruce just explained. And that is the president will essentially, refuse to enforce because he disagrees with it, but Congress doesn't have any opportunity to respond to it or to override it. So in that sense, it is like an item veto.
Bruce?
And the Supreme Court held the line item veto, less than an absolute one, unconstitutional in a case called Clinton versus New York in 1998. We had someone, William Rehnquist, before he was Chief Justice of the United States, as head of the Office of Legal Counsel in the Department of Justice under President Nixon, said, gee, a president's duty to faithfully execute the laws doesn't include the duty not to faithfully execute the laws. And Chief Justice Rehnquist was a strong proponent of executive power.
In the interest of our attempt to, you know, have some balance in this conversation, who supports, beside, I would imagine, the president, who supports or endorses this concept of signing statements? Is this something that generally is supported by the president's party, by the Republican Party, by certain groups within our Congress?
Well, you have actually there is a great deal of support for the signing statement. In fact, there is a great deal of support among former Clinton Justice Department officials.
So it's not purely a partisan issue.
No, it's not. And the support essentially falls in line such as this, that the president is faced with such large bills that fund hundreds and hundreds of programs. Therefore, when he is given a bill, particularly an important spending bill, oftentimes it may contain 99% of the things that he likes, and there's only a few things that he doesn't like. And rather than exercising the veto and perhaps shutting down a whole portion of government, he'll use the signing statement as a way to communicate with members of Congress that this essentially are the things that he found defective, and in some instances he would urge Congress in the future to either avoid adding these sorts of things to the bill, or he urges Congress to make technical corrections to defects that he found in a particular provision of the bill. So there are supporters, and there certainly are supporters, both Democrat and Republican.
Well, Bruce Fein, as a participant in the hearings concerning the use of signing statements, what was the result of this process? Was there some recommended action? I mean, is something coming about as a result?
Well, the Senator Specter asked me, and I sent to him a draft bill that empowers the House of Representatives and the Senate collectively to sue the president in federal court seeking a declaratory judgment that a president's refusal to veto a bill he thinks is unconstitutional and give Congress the opportunity to override it, and in lieu of a veto, simply signing the bill, burying it so Congress cannot override it. And then he ends up enforcing a law that Congress did not pass, because Congress passes a whole law. And as you well know, in the way in which the votes are cast, some members would cast a vote for an entire bill, but they wouldn't have cast that same vote if they knew certain parts would be delimbed. And so you have a second violation of legislative prerogative here, not only being denied the right to override a presidential veto, but also the right to decide what laws are passed, the passage of the laws that Congress voted on, or the laws that Congress voted on and then the president turned into his form of Swiss cheese. And it's that concrete injury to the institutional powers of Congress that I have suggested gives them standing, that's a technical legal term, to bring the president to court and seek a declaratory judgment that a president has only two options when he confronts a bill passed by the Congress: sign all of it or veto and enforce it, or veto it and send it back to Congress for an opportunity to override. I think it's also important historically to note that these claims that if you have an omnibus bill with one defective provision in it, the president is being coerced into signing the whole bill is false. The presidents have in the past said, well, this is a huge bill, this provision is defective, I'm vetoing it, but if you delete the defective provision, I'll sign it. And Congress invariably will take that message and repass the bill without the defective provisions. If it's overwhelmingly necessary to fund the government, Congress will respond to those demands by the president that they delete one or two provisions out of a 1,000-page bill.
We want to invite our listeners to be part of this conversation on presidential signing statements. The phone number is 888-877-3885. Call in with your questions, your comments, or your reactions to this concept, or send an email to forum@wmub.org. Gentlemen, we do have an email from Mark, who says, I have been following Professor Kelly's research on this for quite some time. Would he and Mr. Fein comment on the role of the Internet and new media in bringing the subject to the attention of the public?
I think that the Internet, particularly by making this obscure topic that we're talking about accessible to the public, has been a wonderful help. For instance, there is an attorney out in Oklahoma who on her own time has assembled an annotated database of all of President Bush's signing statements, so that you can see not only the language of the signing statements, but you can also click on parts of the signing statement that will take you to the provision of the laws that the president is objecting to.
And how many signing statements has President Bush II signed?
By my count, he has challenged 955 separate and distinct provisions of law.
And the second highest contender in that
was his father.
Honor.
Yes. Okay. And he behaves very much like his father did when he was in office. So the Internet, I think, has done a great deal to inform individuals on a topic that prior to the Internet and the information age, I don't think it would have been accessible.
Bruce Fein?
One of the things that the task force recommended was that Congress enact a law requiring the president to publish in a form that's accessible all the signing statements, so this ingenious and very laudable voluntary effort to make these statements accessible to the American people is not required, and that the signing statements would be compiled in the same regularized format as U.S. laws and regulations in the Federal Register.
Okay,
and I think that would be an exceptionally helpful way in which the debate and understanding of the presidential signing statements would be enhanced.
We need to take a short break for some news from National Public Radio. This is WMEB Forum, Presidential Signing Statements, the topic of this week's program. Your input is invited. Send an email to forum@wmeb.org. Our phone number, 888-877-3885. We want to touch base on this court ruling yesterday regarding the internal or security measures taken by the Bush administration. That coming up in just a few minutes on WMUB Forum.